Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together? Is my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, on Roleplay Snacks and Jacks, I'm Tamon Rickey on the board. SP Futures up 8, and NASDAQ Futures up 80. We got to be up. We have Snack Futures are a little changed. Investors weigh Iran Hormuz deal. How many more weeks are we going to, every morning, we're going to be weighing on the Hormuz deal? Carl's weighing on it right now. He's got a scale, and he's standing right on it. It says Hormuz right on the scale. What do you think, Carl?
It exploded.
What?
I now only have one leg.
Well, there you go.
there's a tourniquet on the stump of what was the other one.
Kind of unreal, huh?
Well, speaking of things exploding, I'm assuming you heard about the Long March explosion yesterday during launch. Max-Q is a thing, and insufficient bracing and structural strength in the stack of your rocket tends to lead to them buckling.
Oh, yeah?
Which is exactly what it did, per the video. And then, of course, went kaboom.
who makes this one?
God, who's Long? Is Long March Chinese? I think it is.
Oh, all right. It's hard to
know. I think it's Chinese. Yeah, it's a CCP thing. So that's... The news says it failed during launch. Yes, I would say that the some Ting Wong, as I've commented before. Chief, I think we need to have a little more focus among the stocks and jocks community when it comes to a particular little ditty that I came across the other day. Out of Cloudflare, which, you know, they're the guys that front-end a lot of internet sites to try to keep the malicious BS off of them, with only some success. But
with only some success.
Well, that's that, that's that checking to see if you're human thing that automatically runs. You know, you don't have to click a little box or whatever, right?
How come you have to stop clicking the box?
Well, because it's... The click a box thing is basically an arms race. Okay, so you come up with a click a box to, you know, find all of the bicycles, right? And then they build a robot that can use visual detection to figure out what's a bicycle. Then you say, you know, find all the streetlights. Find all the flock cameras will be next. the amusing part of this is that the software that I wrote to run my forum, it's been 15 years now, it has thus far essentially 100% capability of detecting a robotic entry versus a not robotic entry when trying to sign up for an account. Now, I haven't told anybody how I figured out the difference.
Go get a patent and somebody will steal it.
Well, yeah. Once it gets stolen, I'm sure that the bot writers will just simply adapt, right?
Well, then you get to hire Schmo and Schmo to sue them, and good luck with that.
Right, yeah, especially when they're in China, right?
Yeah.
Or in India, for that matter.
You can't sell them here either. They got bigger guys than you.
Well, you know. So
tell that to Brown Camera. Tell it to Brown Camera Company.
Yeah, my amusing aspect of that though is that I've had exactly zero bots polluting my system. The in the 15 years since. And by the way, I don't do any of that manually. So that's all. Once figured out, as long as I don't show anybody how it works, well, there you go. Apparently, they're not all that smart at figuring out how I've detected them.
Well, speaking of not very smart, I'm looking at two headlines here, and I don't. You got to explain them to me because I don't know what the hell they mean.
Well, let me.
Yeah,
let
go
me,
ahead. Finish. No.
Yeah, let me finish because this all does tie into what you're about to say. I guarantee it does. So Cloudflare has reported that for the first time, robotic traffic he has exceeded human on the internet. There is also now predictions flying around that this ratio is going to be 1,000 to 1 within the next 3 or 4 years. Now there's a problem with that. the first one is, why would I pay to access something that is 999 times out of 1,000 AI generated crap? Okay, why would I pay any money for that? Why does that have any value to me as a human? The answer is it does not. By the way, I'm beginning to wonder whether or not I was rather foolish to get involved in building this thing originally, back in the 1980s and 1990s. But, that's water under the bridge, right? 40 years ago. The other question, though, that it raises is one that we're now starting to see. Time Magazine, along with many others, are now turning into AI feed points to attempt to move the advertising needle and the product sales needle within their web presentations, not to humans, but to the computers, to the AIs. Now, that's a problem because, as I have noted many times, as have a bunch of others, once you get a relatively small percentage of this pollution into the input stream that these so-called artificial intelligences ingest, the accuracy goes to an effective zero. Now, statistically, it's essentially worthless. We are not very far away at this point when you have firms deliberately structuring things in this fashion from that occurring.
Who's the mind behind these?
Well, Chief, this is just people trying to, find one little teensy eensy bits of advantage, right?
We don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way. Is that the ultimate of this? Phrase?
Some of that, but the fraud. Okay, the fraud that is coming along with this is right behind it, because it always is when the markets are involved. And when no one goes to jail, which we talk about a lot on the show, right? No one ever goes to jail for fraud. For example, the supposed avocado oil potato chips, if you bought the Kettle brand ones, which, by the way, I did the first time I bought them, they had no impact on my overnight HRV, which is extremely sensitive because I deliberately avoid seed oils. So if I accidentally consume them, it will show up in my overnight numbers. And I thought, hey, look, I finally found something that I can actually have a potato chip snack that doesn't hammer me. Okay, so a few weeks later, Kroger has them on sale. I buy several bags. It was, unopened bag. They'll last for a decent while. Instantaneous hammering. And now there is an actual scientific study out where they took that brand included, a whole bunch of them, and found that your odds of getting something that are adulterated are not actually what's listed on the label is basically 100%, very close, 9 out of 10. And by the way, those were one of the brands that was on the list of not being what it said on the label.
By the way, now, always remember one thing. This package is sold by weight, not by volume. Some settling may have handled during...
happened
during handling and delivery.
Well, when the label says potatoes, avocado oil, and salt, that is what is supposed to be in the bag.
Should be three things: potatoes, avocado oil, and salt.
and salt.
Yeah.
Except that's the profile of the...
So how do they determine which one goes in the avocado bag versus the regular bag if they all use the same thing?
Well, because the avocado bag one is more expensive.
Well, there you go.
And people buy those specifically because they're trying to avoid eating the crap.
What if you did that with somebody with a peanut allergy and they died or something, for God's sake?
Well, that'd be a problem, huh? By the way, the original Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act actually prescribes criminal penalties, serious ones, for deliberately adulterating, mislabeling foods. And a willing and knowing, willful and knowing violation is much worse than an accidental one. Okay, duh, it should be. Well, it is. By the way, this isn't one brand.
Right,
okay, just so you know. Okay. So basically, if you're trying to buy something that is allegedly avocado oil, the odds are extremely high it really isn't.
All right, I have three questions here. I'm staring at it in CNBC, but the first one, I always ask, because I absolutely don't know, and I'll never know, that part I'm get. When we look at the CPI numbers, and you'll see, you know, Carl's mom went out and found out the price of rice, and it's up 0.1%.
Right.
And someplace, somewhere, there's an adjustment that says it's down 0.2%. I try to become out of a researcher of organizations. Who in an organization, government or otherwise, essentially has the balls to make that change? Because most bureaucrats don't do that. Now, my question is, if this, what'd you say was the name of the thing, Cape Cod or something? I want to know, someplace in, there's this bureaucratic mess that runs Cape Cod, and it may not be that many people. Who along the line would take it upon themselves, who would have the balls to say, go ahead and put the peanut oil into the avocado oil bag and don't worry about it? Who would take that responsibility upon themselves, and how much would they even save by doing that?
Well, my suspicion is that this is a supply chain issue where they're not, because
they're not making them, they're buying them from somebody else.
I highly doubt that they're making the avocado oil, okay? However, if you don't verify what you're getting, and if there are no criminal penalties enforced against people who are branding and labeling something as something when it isn't, then the fact that the avocado oil chips are another buck a bag because the input costs are higher, okay, provides an insane incentive to cheat all through the supply chain. All right? Now, I don't know that the Kettle Brand company is the one actually doing it consciously.
Because that would be one hell of a decision for somebody to make.
Well, but somebody obviously did make it, okay, because it occurred, and I know, I have every reason to believe that this study is accurate because, like I said, I tested this. When they first came out, they were something that appeared to be safe, and then 3 weeks later, all of a sudden, they're not.
Well, if you weren't, of course, maybe the CEO's a crook, who knows, I would tend to... I'm going to say.
By the way, speaking of crooks, did you hear what Nvidia CEO just came out and said?
That's what I'm staring right at. That was my next question.
Yeah, I mean it's right on their front page right now, right?
Nvidia lines up $500 billion in financing as CEO Jensen Huang. Whenever I see that guy, I want to cringe. Tells CNBC his chips are investable assets. What the hell does that mean?
Well, sure they are. They're not going to be obsolete in another year and a half. Yes, they are. Like every other cycle of chips ever in the history of chips.
Where did the guy get the $500 billion? And the same. By
the way, your best friends, BlackRock, you know those guys.
Right next to it, Intel upsizes stock offering to $20 billion at $95 a share as AI demand accelerates. So Intel. I thought they just got a big investment from Trump.
They did, but you know, hey man, let's take advantage of a bubble and issue some more. By the way, guess how that $500 billion is a syndicated debt offering. It's being packaged, which means we're going to play CLO and CDO and you know that game again. You know, the same one that blew up the world in 2008.
Yeah.
Incidentally, you now have the SEC is involved openly in this fraud, in that they have now said that the risk retention rules, which were put in place after the 2008 blowup, that are supposed to prevent you marketing things that your internal people call vomit to investors and letting them hold the entire bag. You got to hold part of it, okay? Don't apply to data centers.
Oh, why not?
Because you know, kaboom has never ever happened before.
It's always the same story. We know that, right?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, when you have government regulators, by the way, guess who's going to end up holding this bag? It's going to go into pension funds and insurance companies.
Well, sure.
Because as soon as you take those collars off, then and incidentally, I read a story the other day that now we have yet another, this ought to be a shock too, another so-called rating agency that somehow is magically marking things at 3 and 4 grades above where everybody else is. So all of a sudden this stuff becomes investment grade, where by anybody else's standards it would be rated junk. And guess who's paying them? The people who are packaging the crap. Now, I thought we put a stop to that too.
Well, we haven't put a stop to anything, because here's another, there's a 1 hour ago thing. I mean, I don't know that much about FIFA soccer, but virtually everybody we've had on the show and anybody I've ever talked to claims it is the world's most corrupt organization. Maybe.
Well, it sure looks like it. Yeah, I saw that one.
but now our president, who seems to be involved in everything that he knows nothing about, well, maybe he does. He probably got a piece of it. Trump, World Cup will never be as profitable if Infantino is ousted. Of course,
right,
it's profitable.
Because
it's
cricket. The more I steal, the more money I make.
He wants to make this guy head of our ambassador to the UN.
If in a den of thieves, may I suggest knife-proof chainmail?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, under your suit, right? This kind of thing is. But in the technical area where I see really serious, you know, where I see the signs of the buckling, okay, I hear hissing, you know, the overpressure valve is not working as well as it should be.
Well, the signs have been there for a while. You and I are just can't believe that how loud they are now, and still nobody's paying attention.
Well, when you have these guys coming out and say that within the next, and these are people that actually have the data, okay? They've seen the trajectory, so they're not...
It does feel like 2000.
Well, Chief, they're not talking out their ass, okay? When you have Cloudflare putting out stuff about the traffic share issues, these guys, they do have their finger in that pie. So they are not talking out their ass. They are telling you what they're actually seeing, all right? And the unfortunate reality of this is that what you now have is, you know, I buy a gigabit size pipe, you buy a pipe up there to, you know, do your trading through and whatever have you, right?
Yep.
But, you know, when I've got my trading console up here on my screen as we're talking, so, and I can see, you know, I can see the tick by tick thing in the S&P futures and all these other companies that I have on watch. Okay, that's fine. And that value is still there. However, an equal amount of traffic on that same network is now chatbots and AI systems trying to screw you and I out of money somehow, because, by the way, if nobody pays them, nobody would run them, right? Duh. All right. So, and we have one of the largest companies today that their task is keeping malicious denial of service attacks off your network, which you know, they don't do a perfect job of it, but they do help. That's why people pay them. Saying that within the next couple of years, 1,000 times as much of the traffic as you putting trades into your trading console through IB and me doing it through Thinkorswim or whatever, is within just a few years, 1,000 times as much of it is going to be AI slop trying to screw you out of another $50 on your car insurance.
Well, that's, you know, what you just said, because you know way more about this kind of stuff than me. That's why I'm learning, and I think the listeners are learning. I have the same I come at it from a totally different way, but I get to the same spot. And it's the same spot that I basically got to in 2001. I didn't know enough about the individual companies, and I don't now, to say, okay, right. Man, you know, Palantir could be the massive winner here. I mean, you know more about, you might say no, and or they might say NVIDIA could be the massive winner. But I look at the prices, and I look at the...
Yeah, it's valuation.
But I look at the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and any out of these 20 stocks maybe I could name, and there's a lot more that I can't name, but or, you know, I haven't done the research on, two or three or four of them might be the person that lands that pot of gold. But not all 20 can possibly grow into the price they are now because the world isn't big enough.
That's precisely the point, okay, about this thing about, okay, 1,000, you know, the growth of the AI traffic is going to be a factor of 1,000 from where it is today. And where it is today, by the way, is equal to humans. Therefore, half of the money that you spend today, and every, you know, I pay my internet bill, and that money filters up into the backbone infrastructure that we all use, right? Because I pay my internet provider just like people paid me back in the 1990s. All right, you paid your $20 bill to me, and a lot of people, you know, obviously did do that. Okay, all that money that I took in after I paid the salaries, I paid for the equipment, everything else, I had to pay for the circuits and the hardware to the interconnects and everything else, and to operate that piece of it. And so did everybody else, all right? That's why it's there, because that the money that you pay somebody ends up funding the rest of that infrastructure.
Well, just so I'm kind of clear here, because I'm not giving any kind of market advice, because I got stocks that are I'm chasing calls in, and I'm, you know, I've got some, like my clients have stocks that are going down, some are going up. And I'm not going to say that Microsoft is priced like it's going to double. And I'm not talking about double earnings. I'm talking about double revenue. And they might. And NVIDIA is priced like it's going to quadruple, for God's sake.
But and not all of them.
And they might. But if those two do, you're not going to know who Palantir is. Because they can't they can't all do it. They can't.
Right. That's exactly the same thing that happened in 1999.
Right, right.
Okay, is that it, you know, in 96, 97, 99... As this kept going on, every week there was another IPO. Every week there was another this. There was another red herring that came across my desk that I was reading. And you added all of that up, and you said, wait a minute, these jackasses claimed 100 times the global GDP.
Right. It's exactly right.
Okay, and I'm like, now, that doesn't mean they're all going to blow up, because obviously some of them will not. However, there is no possibility that all of this is true.
Well, you also can't, just on a social, we had Dr. Johnson on yesterday. On a social, when he was talking about me knowing some economics, I was a behavioral economics economist. I'm nothing like Hal, where Hal he digs into all the math. He's more of a econometrics. He digs into the numbers. The economics I took, even though there was a lot of math involved, some guys, was it's a behavioral science. It's the apportionment of scarcity, which is what economics is. How you do it, you know, is choosing. So, but the idea that we can all, these guys that seem to have the world by the tail, can continue to march in front of if the Chiefs can continue to move in front of the Braves without stopping to feed the Braves, at some point you got no more Braves. You can't get blood out of a turnip, as the Irish say. So at some point, these guys can't triple if nobody in the country is either getting laid off because they're moving people to India, or nobody gets a raise. Because someplace, somewhere, the money's got to come to them. Where's it going to come from? I mean, it's like 1929, for God's sake, when what percent of the people had all the money?
Here's where a lot of this meets the road. Okay, so this last jobs report was very punky.
Yeah.
By anyone's standard. So, Kroger, for example, is one of the major employers in Cincinnati. They're and that's been true for a long time. When I was working on putting
together. Who's the other one that started? Procter & Gamble, right?
I think so, yeah. But when I was doing computers on grocery shopping cart handles for as a wage slave, I was not running that company. I was an employee. That was where it was. And we spent some time there because we were working on integrating that stuff into their equipment, okay? You know, because that's kind of how it works, right? Everybody had their own back-end processors, and you had to be able to talk to them in order to do what we were doing. So it was there back then, all right? So this is, you know, a long time. These are really well-paying jobs. They're digital integration stuff. It was then, it is now. And I mean, you're talking about median salaries in that group, I'm sure, are north of 100 grand. I'm absolutely certain.
How does somebody, I sort of asked you this on Friday, how does somebody make the guess of what percentage efficient, how good they are compared to the people you have? I mean, what if you're paying the people over there half as much and they turn out to be a third as good?
Well, so basically, I'll tell you what's happening.
If you're a monopoly, you don't care, but they're not.
Well, but they're not.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what's happening though, because I've seen this repeatedly, and it's always been BS. Okay, in the end, it has always been crap. But the sales pitch is essentially, it's the same thing that CRM, Salesforce, has run on people forever, which is you use our software, you don't need as many dudes. Okay, so we're gonna replace the dude with a computer, basically. Now you say, well, you know, that's not entirely true. Well, yeah, that's the pitch. All right.
Anyway, let me know when Joel pops in. We have no Kenny, so you gotta recover Kenny.
Well, and Chief, that's always been the pitch, though. If you think about it, okay, I don't need people who are skilled typists because now I have word processors who spell correct, right? So the missed key strike. Is no longer white out.
The only flaw in that argument is when I was at Pullman and the ladies were, quote, typists.
Right.
Those people, they didn't spend any time on the computer hacking around with their own personal email. They produce more in a day than people do now.
Oh, I understand that. Oh, but
which
oh,
is bizarre.
Well, this was... Look, Malik broke the checkers union in the grocery stores by putting computer scanners in there that IRI funded, which allowed unskilled people to drag your crap across the scanner, right? Okay, I mean, and some of this is the nature of automation and the nature of technology. It's not always a scam and a screw. It's just...
Well, in theory, if the machine helps you, the person produce more, the person should get some of that increase, but if the machine lets an idiot run it, then it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work like that. And then, but then the other problem you have is that every time that some company like Kroger has thrown 5,000 jobs out of the United States and put them in India because they pay $30,000 a year over there, and here they pay $120,000. And by the way, our government does absolutely nothing about this on a policy level. Their answer to this is print up another $1 trillion worth of debt and distribute it to those people as EBT or Section 8 or whatever. They just got screwed and displaced.
Well, I have a... All right. One thing I want you to chew on while
but we
here.
Can't do it. But, Chief, that depends on the financing costs for that always going down, and
well,
we're not in that world
anymore.
The
problem is, if you find out you made a mistake, you sort of can't come back if you really get rid of your department.
Well, yeah, hello.
That's a problem. Hey, I read this thing a long time ago, and I thought it was total BS. And I'm not so sure now that it is. This guy wrote an economic paper. It had to do with, essentially, I don't know what the word he would use, but kind of what we have now. Not capitalism, free market capitalism, that I think you and I are all for. It had to do with what if that gets away from you, basically, and you end up with this plutocracy kind of crap we have now, where no antitrust is enforced, nothing like that. And all of a sudden, you know, 1,000 people end up with some huge percentage of the dough. The guy's premise was that in some ways that's actually somewhat vibrant for an economy. Essentially a few people using the laws and other stuff. to steal all the money from everybody else, which is essentially a lot of worries about now what's happening in some areas, not everywhere. And but if the government's going to allow that, they have to be smart enough to take the money from those people, redistribute it so the next group can do it all over again. Otherwise, you get to the point where they can't take anymore because they got it all. And I was reading this article going, this is really a wacky thing to say. I'm not so sure it's all that wacky. If you get to that stage.
I mean, at some point,
if Elon Musk has $20 trillion, you got to say, geez, he's stolen it from somebody. We got to get it back to somebody so he can steal it again. I mean, it's like, when you get to that stage, what do? Have 90% of the population clipping coupons and 10% sitting there not even knowing what to spend it in?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm not.
I wouldn't have written
that article, but now that I think back about it, the guy wasn't all wrong.
Yeah.
Scary as it may seem. Anyway, Joel, how are you, bud?
I'm doing well. How you guys doing on this Tuesday?
We're doing the best we can, considering.
Considering what?
Well, you know, we got the... Well, our teams are doing okay here. It's everything's fine. So there's stuff. I'm having trouble with the market. I got some people stock going to the moon, other people stock going down. It's seems very bizarre to me. And these valuations are something I can't deal with.
First of all, let's talk about the important stuff. Did you see what the Tigers have done since they traded Scooble and Mize?
They've like won every game, haven't they, or something?
Yep. They're one and a half games out of the wild card. They got Travis Melton stepping up. He's 8-1. Jackson Jobe coming off Tommy John. Farmer Valdez, who they thought would be number two, they signed him for 2 years at $40 million. Really hasn't performed, but he's three on the depth chart. They're starting to hit the ball. Could still win the division.
Oh, yeah.
Just stick it to those Dodgers. I mean, anybody but the Dodgers. But they had to trade them. They had to trade Scooble. It's a messy situation. Just for Scooble and Scott Boras, if you're listening, man, I don't know if you're playing your cards right, because if they change that CBA and they put a salary cap in, you might have wished you would have taken the money from Detroit.
I'm not a big fan of salary caps, but I'd like to see the union being broken, to be honest with you. I'd like to get the antitrust thing out of there, but that'd just be me. Everybody else loves it. They like other people that can't go anywhere. I mean, I don't know why people cheer a draft when if they were in a draft, all they do is squeal, right?
Yep.
It is amazing how we like other people being treated like we don't want to be treated. Just saying. It's always fun that way, isn't it? We got valuations. We have our senior guy who can do no wrong, Besant, spent $10 billion to prop up the yen. I don't know if you noticed, up until today, the yen's going right back to where it was. It's almost at 160. Yes. It's down a little bit. So what if it gets back up there again? Are we going to keep spending money to do this?
Boy, oh boy, Chief. Man, I will say you're kind of getting out of my wheelhouse a little bit with this dollar stuff and the dollar intervention. Historically, it doesn't work, right? And the ramifications of it for us, right? You know, sometimes it causes a little stir in the market, shaking up the carry trade. But that didn't happen.
No.
So it's coming back. I'm worried about other things, Chief. I'm worried about other things.
Well, pick your worry. There's a million of them out there. Which one do you want to worry about? What are you worrying about?
What I'm most worried about, I don't want to talk about on the show.
All right.
You're not
going to put all your money into this $500 billion in NVIDIA, are you?
Oh, my gosh. Do you know they've been talking? I was just going to make fun with my team about... They have been covering. I turned off my TV at 5 o'clock last night. I hardly watch CNBC. I could hardly watch it, right? And they had this big round table on. They're doing it. I turned my TV on this morning, and they're talking about the same darn thing. I mean, is it a big deal? Tell me, Chief. Is it a big deal?
I want a quick story.
I love quick stories.
When Dr. J was on CNBC, all day, he was the option guy, right? Well, he has the producer over at his house for his party. And I'm over there, and I'm BSing with the guy. And they had invited me on once in a while. I was only on a few times. And the last time I was on, it had to do with, like, Walmart earnings. Which I don't really give a rat's ass about, to be honest with you. You know, I had a few people at Walmart, so to that extent I did. But other than that, you know. So, of course, you got to get dressed up, and you go over there. It's in this little studio, and they throw some makeup on you. And but there's you have no there's no monitor. You don't even know who you're talking to if you didn't know the voice. So fortunately, I listened enough when John was on to know that it was Kernan or the other guy. And there's no obvious spot where the camera is, right? So you're looking and you're trying to find where the camera is, and you're looking around. And then they say something to me about Walmart earnings. It, believe it or not, it's how long ago it was. It was the day that Warren Buffett bought the Burlington Northern. And Joe Kernan said something. Oh, hey, Chief, what do you... You know anything about this? And I said, well, actually, Joe, you're kind of right in my wheelhouse. Railroads are my, you know, I work for a railroad company and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, Burlington Northern was a merger of the Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy, the Great Northern, the Northern Pacific, and whatever the fourth one was. And he's looking at me like I had five heads, right? And he says, well, what do you think they bought it for? And I said, well, Joe, there's all kinds of rumors of oil up in that area. There's no pipelines. It's a monopoly delivery system for that oil. Warren Buffett's not a dummy. He just bought a place that has a monopoly delivery system of all the oil up there. They couldn't wait to get me off. If it was a gong show, the gong would have gone off. So anyway, talking to this producer, and I go, you know, it's kind of weird. I don't really care if I come back on again because you have five people there talking about Walmart earnings. Then 20 minutes later, you got another five people talking about Walmart. And you never let anybody essentially finish their story. You just go on to the next one. And he goes, well, that's what saved the show. You never let anybody actually draw a conclusion. You just get other people on there to tee up the question so the question stays live, but nobody ever gets to really answer it. I go, leave me out. But that's actually an absolute plan on their part. That's why you're going to hear the same thing and the same people. You're never going to let anybody talk. There's always going to be four people, three people. Never anybody talk to the end like we on this show. We actually make people, you know, you go all the way to you get your point to the end. They don't want people doing that. And you know, by the way, they're on national TV, and you and I are here. So, and, you know, I guess it works, right? You just, you know, but it is a plan. It's not something you just happen to see.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for years it was, you know, the nightly business report. You know, their Wall Street Week and all these different things. And we were the original podcasters back in 2013, and I'm sure you were one of the pioneers too.
Actually, John was.
It's just flexibility. Like, yeah. With our show, it's flexibility. Like, we, you know. You know, you don't fault. They have, you know, 87 producers and writers and everything. And then what they do is they listen to pre-market prep from 8 to 9. And then they take the best of our show and they throw that, you know, they throw that to Kramer's writers at 9. So that happens a lot. But, it's Recycle News. And you know what the funny thing is, too? And I know certain people use these certain strategies. They'll hear some news about a stock that's good news, and they'll actually go out and buy the stock because they know in 10 or 15 minutes CNBC is going to talk about it, and it will get another pump.
Well, when Jan and I were on the score, we ran it from 5 to 6, right? So all these people are piling in. And Rick Santelli, who's on CNBC, and he's a good guy, every once in a while I hear him say something, and I know damn well he was listening to our show. Because sometimes I'll use a South Side adjective that nobody else will use, and I could tell.
Yeah.
I could or John will say something kind of in a sports way, and I could tell he was listening to one of us, which is fine with me. You know, but the thing that's odd, once in a while, if I'm reading a CNBC article, I'll always cite who wrote the article. And Maddie Weber said, Chief, what do you do that for? Nobody does that anymore. They just take whatever they want and make like it's theirs. I go, Maddie, I can't do that. It's not the way I was trained. If I'm quoting from somebody's article, I've got to say who wrote the article, for God's sake. He goes, why? Nobody else does. They can do what they want and, you know, whatever.
Hey, do you still do your updates and stuff?
No, we used to do that. When Mike North
left. Oh,
No, when Mike North left, they didn't want to do it anymore. It's a score decision.
What was that guy's name?
Mike North was the guy in the morning.
No, no, no. I'm talking about the guy that worked directly with you and did, like, updates.
Yeah, it was Dr. J did all that.
Yeah, no, it was, oh, okay, like sports and weather. Yeah. And what the oh, okay.
But it was all, okay. I mean, he was on, matter of fact, we did the show, he did the updates in the morning and I did the one in the afternoon on the score back in the day.
No, I'm talking like when I used to come on. There used to be someone that came on.
Oh, and, I can't remember.
I forget what his name was. You had a few different people. One lady, she got in a car accident. You had Maddie Ice.
Yeah, Maddie was on. And we had a girl, Maddie. But Matt Weber always did the sports updates.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss Maddie. Is he doing good?
Yeah. I don't know. He's got the two little girls running him around.
Yeah. Okay. So, Chief, not much to say about the market. Microsoft, some of the software's come back. Value's looking okay. I mean, what could go wrong, Chief? We broke out. We broke out hard. Who cares about the war in Ukraine? Who cares about the war in Iran? Who cares about midterm elections? Everything. Full gear. Full bull ahead. Okay?
I think you're probably right for a little while. One of these days, these inflation numbers are going to catch up.
Okay. All right. Always enjoy talking to you, Chief. Go Blue.
All right. Take care, bud. Carl, you still with us?
I am.
The
okay,
Kevin Kevin's texted in to agree with you, by the way, that, you know, creating a work culture from thousands of miles away is a very difficult job. They better make sure that they're getting enough of a discount.
Well, and by the way, this is part of why you're going to start seeing problems with it here, not even from 1,000 miles away, but from 1,000 feet away or from 10 feet away, because if you look at the pattern of hiring in the technical, the IT space, and the pattern of what has happened with the managerial side all the way down, the pattern is that you bring a couple of H-1Bs in, they end up in a managerial role, and then from that point onward, the entire department is Indian within 2 years. Now, that, by the way, is illegal as hell.
Well, Carl, okay. before you go, I don't disagree, but how do you, I'm just saying, while I was talking to Joel, I was also trying to think about, like when Pullman had a design department, an engineering department.
Right.
If you outsource that, how would you even, there's a process that people working together kind of develop sort of on their own. Is who does what first, who does what second, those kinds of things. How do you...
How do you expect critical path analysis?
Yeah, how do you export all that? You can over a period of time, but how do you...
You pick up the entire department wholesale and shove it there. That's what Kroger's doing.
Except that the people aren't going. They're here.
No, but I'm saying what you do is you take the entire encapsulation, because every organization has silos, right? Why? Because you have to, right? The guys that design a car, and you say, well, you know, but the guy that did the HVAC for that Pullman car, he has to work with the guys that are doing the mechanicals on the metal that has to enclose the car.
Well, you got to work with the guy if you hook it on the bottom of the car where there's room for it. Yeah,
well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, the chassis got to, you know, the chassis guy's got to be in this loop, right? Or the chassis group.
Yep.
All right. Well, what these guys are doing is picking up the entire engineering group of the car and sending the entire thing to India.
Ah.
All right. Now, the problem with this is that you've got that happening. And by the way, we impose no wage and environmental parity tariffs on this. You take a look at the median income levels, and you're talking about a country that has a median personal income approximately equal to Senegal.
Yeah.
Right? By the way, there is not a single American who can compete in that world because our cost of living is five times as high as theirs. All right? So that's, if you allow that as a policy, you're gonna get assets stripped to your underwear as a country. Now, the other issue that goes along with this, though, is even worse, is that we bring these people in here on so-called temporary visas, because supposedly you don't have anybody in America.
Well, so we're planning on bringing some people here to run the thing over there? We don't know that.
Yeah, and by the way, if you believe that we don't have anybody that can program a computer in the United States, you've got rocks in your head, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've got these guys saying that there's nobody who will man a ski lift in Colorado in the winter season. Oh, right, there's no college students who you can't train in a week on how to do that. That's bullshit, and everyone knows.
Well, by the way, you did you happen to listen in yesterday when Dr. Mark was talking?
No, I was not on yesterday. He's
our psychologist buddy, and he was saying he's doing all this consulting work in New York. These people in their 30s and 40s that are now out of jobs.
Yeah.
He says virtually all of them are IT.
Yeah.
And he says the weird part of New York, the pressure's on so much because if you're laid off for like 2 months, you can't afford your rent. It's not like you're somewhere else where you might be able to hang in there for 6 months or a year.
Right, right. No, this is,
because it's super high pressure.
Well, and this is, oh, by the way, this is what ultimately will detonate all of this from a political and a reasonably peaceful society point of view, because, duh, right? When is it going to detonate? I don't know. But the answer has been, for the last 30 years, is this, because, you know, this, look, go back and look at the claims of NAFTA. They were complete crap. All right,
yep.
With absolute garbage. Now, has anybody been held accountable for those lies? No. And
it wasn't the theory; it was the execution.
You know what? Everybody always listen. Socialism sounds fabulous, except it never works. By the way, after the first 10 times that you do this, it doesn't work. You don't get
capitalism
to claim.
Sounds good until that doesn't work either. Somebody prevents anybody else from entering their business, which
and by the way, that used to be Guido with a gun at 3 o'clock in the morning, right?
Hey, you mentioned, I got a quick story regarding the key thing. You were talking about drawings.
Yeah.
On a railroad car, you might be the only person in the world knows it. Name me the key drawing on a railroad car. The one that
I don't know.
The one
I would assume it's the actual chassis fitment.
You're close. It's the undercar arrangement drawing.
Yeah, that's essentially where everything attaches on the frame of the vehicle. Right.
So we had this guy Porter. He's this tough old Irish guy, and we get all these consultants in, and they want to hurry up the first car, right?
Yeah.
So he says, "Look, one guy does the undercar arrangement drawing. It takes him several weeks to do it." And you have to do it right, and you have to know everything you're doing, because whether somebody else is doing it doesn't match up. So the guy goes, consultant says, well, why don't you put 3 or 4 people on that drawing?
That doesn't work.
And he says, well, I could, but if I had the same mentality, if I wanted a baby in 1 month, I'd go out and have sex with 9 girls. The guy looks at him like he's got 4 heads. He goes, all right, I get your point.
Funny how that works, right? But, yeah, it's just, you know, but we have, Chief, we have so much hype and BS going around. Like, just as one other example that happens to be very topical today with regards to the market and where everything's going, you have Elon and SpaceX have announced this Terafab thing. Okay, in Texas, largest chip fabrication plant in the world. Now he is working on, and this gets into the weeds a little bit.
These are competitors with Intel and NVIDIA, right? Or different stuff.
Well, actually, but there's another aspect to this, which is that there's one company that makes all the high speed, high density lithography equipment in the world today.
All right, what's lithography equipment?
They're the people who figured out, essentially, you print chips, essentially.
So you're talking about the backbone of the making of the chips. There's only one company.
I'm talking about ASML. They're the only company that knows how to do this.
And they're headquartered where?
It doesn't matter where they're headquartered. What matters is that one of their machines is in every one of these foundries.
But I mean, if you wanted to, if I wanted to buy stock in the place, could I buy it?
Well, it's a Dutch multinational corporation.
Okay, so they're okay. Dutch, right?
Now, their magic, if you will, is that they have figured out how to do laser lithography at a tolerance level nobody else is mastering.
How did they pull that off? You have any idea?
They're just really good. Okay, they're just. I mean, plenty of other people have shot at them. Nobody's managed to pull it off. So Elon believes that there is another way to do this, which has been talked about some. Nobody's made it work. He thinks he can. Okay, maybe he's right. Maybe he's wrong. All right, this is. It's not pie in the sky bullshit at a conceptual level. That nobody's made it work doesn't mean it can't be made to work. It just means that it hasn't been figured out yet.
Okay.
Right? So I will give him credit on that, and that might have a basis. That's not the problem. The problem is, in order for this plant that he is putting up and is part of the hype behind SpaceX, in order for this to actually get somewhere, you have to have somewhere for these chips to go, and the place where they're going to go within his ecosystem is into these orbital data centers. All right. In other words, he's going to put data centers in space. Now, there's all sorts of cost issues and reasons why I think that that's absolutely insane. However, let's assume that those issues are resolvable. Now, you have to his launch cadence to be able to pull this off is over 100 launches a day.
Well,
now, that means that his spaceships have to have the reusability cadence of a commercial airliner or better.
He's got to have a shuttlecraft like the Enterprise.
Except, Chief, every one of those launches requires cryogenic propellants, so you have to cool down, you have to separate out the oxygen from the air and then cool it to cryogenic temperatures. You have to cool the methane.
Let's not baffle the argument with the details.
Oh, well, how about this detail? As long as we have to launch into space using chemical propulsion, we cannot come back by other than frictional slowing down. And that's a physics problem because you can't carry enough propellant.
That's why we need the shuttlecraft.
Well, guess what? That means we need a Scotty, and he hasn't shown up yet, right? Now, if you... no one seriously believes that has done any sort of work on this. I mean, I don't care if you only do an hour's worth, that you can actually take these things, fly them, have them come back into the atmosphere and land, which maybe you can solve that, and then 15 minutes later, stack it back on top of a booster,
you gotta have a whole lot of power to come back in then.
Chief, but you can't carry... That's the whole problem. You have to use the atmosphere as a brake because you can't carry enough propellant to come back in under power.
You know, the first... This was 1974. I'm not going to show my age here, but there was a class at Notre Dame called Space Tech and Society. And it was for the people in aerospace engineering, which was, you know, talk about the world's toughest major. Right. Matter of fact, it was a four-year major there. It was a five-year major at Ohio State. My cousin was in it.
Yeah.
But they had one class where it was kind of a relief class where you could go take it, and guys would go in there and they was in this big theater, and they teach you how to do kites and stuff like that and wings, yeah. And they had three guys that taught the class. I thought it was fascinating. Of course, the rest of the idiots, nobody showed up, right? Because it was an A course. We didn't have very many at Notre Dame, but it was an A course. I went every time. I learned more in that class than any place else. I remember almost all of it. But one of the guys was this Dr. Nicolades, who he had been like one of the heads of NASA or something. And yeah. He was talking about the original design of the shuttle before they had the solid fuel rockets on the side. So they didn't want to have any part of that. They were going to build this huge launch thing. It was like a massive 747. It didn't look like a 747. The idea was this thing was going to be able to take off with the shuttle on it.
Right.
Fly up to like 45,000 feet or 50,000 feet, drop the thing off there.
And then it would have enough thrust to get past the launch.
So the shuttle would be able to go from there. It probably still had the big tank on it, but it didn't have the solid fuel things. And he goes, that thing would fly back down and land like an airplane. You could put another one right on it the next day and go again. So we're still trying to get that same thing that these guys envisioned in the 60s, and we can't get there.
Well, no, that's not the problem. That's not even the problem, Chief. The problem is that if you essentially have to use brake shoes
Okay, the tile's at the bottom. Right.
Yeah.
You have to use the atmosphere to slow back down and dissipate that energy. And the reason you have to use the atmosphere isn't because you wouldn't like to use the rocket, all right, to slow back down and to dissipate the energy. You can't get the fuel off the ground to do it.
Well, I'm saying
it's a math problem.
I know, but if you had two separate units,
it doesn't help you. You have to lift everything you want into space off the ground in the first place.
Yeah, I understand it, but if you shoot up like a Saturn V, you use like 80% of your stuff in the first how many minutes when the thing is that huge?
And 95% of what you use entirely is propellant.
I understand that. But I'm saying what the original plan was is the machine that got you 80% of the way.
Yeah,
could fly back down, and the other thing hasn't used a drop of fuel up to that point.
Well, except that it still doesn't help.
Right, it helps. You still not have enough to come back like a space shuttle, like an Enterprise.
Well, you can come, but as long as you have to do that, the problem is if you the amount of energy that has to be dissipated on the way back in is large enough, if anything goes wrong with dissipating that energy, everybody inside and everything and the craft itself explodes. It's lost.
Well, that's because you're coming back from the moon. We'll move on from this in a second. You're coming back from the moon. The reason why you're getting here is the Earth's gravity. So by the time you're getting here, you're going really damn fast, right?
The energy level. Well, that's also. But see, this was why with the original Apollo shot, and by the way, not just that one, but all of them since
Gemini, Mercury, you name it.
Well, but like today, Artemis.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the reason that they don't come back into Earth orbit. You can't carry enough propellant to slow back down.
Yeah, you got to.
It's not that they wouldn't like to.
Anybody who watched Star Trek knows that you slow down to get into orbit. Well, you can't do that if you don't have any juice left.
You don't have any fuel.
Yeah.
Right. You used it all going out there. So that is orbital mechanics is for all intents and purposes exactly the same problem. So the idea that you're going to have a launch cadence of 100 ships plus a day—that's
why they shouldn't give stuff like this for guys like you to read.
Well, guess what? It's complete bullshit. Oh. And anybody that invests in that, believing that. You are buying a Carnival Barker's crap. Now, if Scotty shows up and shows us how to do this without having to use chemical propulsion, now we got the answer, and now all of this becomes very reasonable. But I haven't seen that guy yet.
No, and we have these numbers. How does NVIDIA need $500 billion more dollars, for God's sake.
Well, Chief, the reason that they're trying to package this is because the circular financing is getting out of hand, and NVIDIA has a pre-tax operating margin that is at risk because everybody and their brother is shooting at them in the chip space for these AI chips. Well, when you have a 40% pre-tax operating margin, people do that. Duh!
The stock is going down to 190. On the 29th of July, which wasn't very long ago, last I checked.
Yep.
Now we're at 220. That's $30 times 25 billion shares outstanding.
Yep.
What is that, $7 trillion? No, it's $700
billion. $700
billion. Yeah.
But here's, Chief, but that... How do you extract that back out to spend it, see?
This well, is how, but problem. How do you even... How does a regular person, which, you know, I don't think anybody would call us regular. I'm not so sure anybody would call any of our listeners regular because they listen to us. How does a regular person, even I think most of the people who listen are somewhat up the knowledge chain, how do you even conceive of $700 billion in a month?
All you got to do is take a look at how fast our federal debt keeps going up.
Yeah, I mean,
and you know, here's the interesting part of that. If you think about what has actually made possible all of the displacement that I was talking about earlier, it's that, because you do that to people,
And in the corporations do it in search of a better operating margin. Duh.
Well, that's okay. Kind of what they're supposed to do.
Well, okay, except they're supposed to have to absorb the expense side of the ledger when they do it.
You never want to do that. You always want to give the expenses to somebody else.
So what did they do is they essentially, through the political process, forced it on everybody else through the federal deficit.
What do you think the definition of pollution is? Put your costs on somebody else.
Absolutely. And as long as the cost of continuing to roll over that debt continues to go down, this looks sustainable. It isn't, because that is a cyclical thing and cannot continue forever on a lower to lower basis. Well, now it's turned. Well, and so now that has to be expelled from the public balance sheet back onto the corporations that did it. And if they
It'll never go back to them.
You're going to get a civil war, because you can't finance it, therefore it must stop. Well, what do you do when 50% of the population ends up displaced and has no food and no job?
Okay, when has it ever gotten back to the person who actually was the knave? Whenever.
I'm not telling you that I think it's that we have a reasonable chance of it happening. I'm saying that the outcome, if it doesn't, is not one you're going to enjoy.
I think there's a chance that you could be correct, but if you're one of those guys that's doing this, why would they ever fear anything like that? Why would this Besant guy
Well, they'll fear it when it starts happening.
Yeah, but why? You know what I'm pissed off at? And I admit everything to the listeners.
By the way, Besant is a Soros protege. You know that, right? He worked for him.
I think he reminds me of the guy in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Every time Liberty said something, he laughed.
It's like this
guy
funny?
Yeah. Anyway, but I mean, you know what? I'm pissed off at myself. These guys have found every way from Adam to pour money into the economy. And they're not going to stop, just like the Germans never stopped in the Weimar Republic, until there's some kind of big crisis. And I don't want to see that.
Oh, they'll stop. There's going to be a funny Austrian painter that's going to show up right here.
I'm talking about economically. Someday, somewhere, somebody's going to lob an inflation number at them that they can't deal with. I mean, somebody...
You think?
Well, but it's not going to come from them. But my point being is, I was... All the different ways they've been injecting money in, I never saw this yen thing coming. And I'm pissed at myself for not seeing it.
By the way, you know how they did that, right? They screwed the Europeans.
Yeah, yeah.
Which incidentally, they did without telling them.
What did
they
do? They didn't just buy with dollars. They bought with euros, right?
They did it through the swap with euros, right. So the United States, by the way...
It doesn't matter. It's still money into the system, no matter which way it is.
Well, I understand it, but they're rather pissed off about this, okay, the Europeans, with good cause. However... As with every other time that this has been done, it has never stuck.
No,
and
it never
it didn't
has.
Stick
never
this
has.
Time either. Right.
It's like the... And governments have done this. They started... God, when I was in college, they were doing currency... intervention. Or they call it an intervention. It's going too high. And what you're trying to do... The government is thinks they're bigger than the market. Well, this is a $10 billion intervention...
Right.
Which is a lot of money, but what's the currency trade every day? It's like 100 billion or some huge number. I mean, it's like, it's what, 10 times more than the stock market?
Well, it's more than that. I did some work for a international banking concern, just general basic, IT type things. Okay, they were making an unbelievable amount of money just arbitraging between New York and over in Zurich.
And those people do a much better job of it than governments.
By the way, they were pretty good at it, because they were consistently profitable doing it. Okay.
Well, but they're also grabbing pennies.
They're grabbing tiny fractions of a penny.
Yeah.
Right. But being wrong one time buries you.
Oh, sure.
Well, so you'd better be
what do you
right
think
of, because
what do
you
think
get
a
run
move,
over by the steamroller.
What do you think a six-point move in the end did if you were on the wrong side of that?
Oh, God. Yeah, forget it. Carry you out on... there's not even enough left to worry about a shield. Just grab a broom.
Do we have Professor with us?
We have Hal here.
Yeah.
I'll let him have his time.
Pile in, bud.
Hey, what's up? How you guys doing?
We're doing all right. We're talking about money flows and this yen thing and how the yen's coming right back to where it was.
I was thinking about that scene in that Kevin Spacey movie regarding the not The Big Short, the other one where I guess the company, like Lehman Brothers, they're sitting around a conference table, and the owner of the company, he's a plot device. He's a great plot device. He's a great actor. I think it's Jeremy Irons. He acts dumb because, you know, these plot devices, you have to have some guy that asks all these dumb questions so the audience is informed. That's who Jeremy Irons is, something like I do. Yeah. He's basically what they're doing is they're gonna burn all their customers. And Kevin Spacey is like, dude, if we do this, if we tell everybody at 8 in the morning to buy this stuff and it's gold, by 10 we're gonna be selling it for 50 cents on the dollar. By 3 we're gonna be selling it for 30 cents on the dollar. Our reputation is gonna be forever harmed. And the funny thing about it is that's kind of what Bessette did with the euro.
Yeah.
Right? He did the exact same thing, but government get away with it. You know, I think Bessette might have just burned his bridges in the private sector.
So what's he going to do if Japan still has a problem with the oil? He's still got a problem with the currency,
yeah.
And it's a month from now, and the yen's back to 163. Then what, he's going to do it all over again?
Yeah, that's the problem with these interventions. And Hayek talks about this in his book. You know, you intervene in the marketplace. You create two unintended consequences. Well, now, if you don't undo that intervention, now you got to do two interventions for both those consequences. And if we just assume two consequences per intervention, you can quickly run into a situation like we see with the Federal Registry, where it grows geometrically. Right, the number of pages.
Well, when do I get, say, if I'm not the government, but so say the market starts going down. Well, you know, these guys, I mean, I have a feeling these guys are going to try and intervene in the market. So, okay, yeah. if you pile in and you buy spoos, and 2 days later your spoos are way down, how come they get to call it an intervention and I have to call it a real crummy trade?
Well, the government can do no wrong. And I get a kick out of all these people who want free government service this and free government service that. All you have to do is go to the freaking DMV, and you realize what a government monopoly does. They don't need to care about you. They don't need to care at all, because they're going to get paid. Because the government is forcing everybody to pay for a service that they may or may not be using, may never use. Everybody's got to pay it, so there's no way you can upset the customer, and that's the reason why monopolies.
I tell you what, the DMV in Illinois, which everybody says is such a horrible state, the DMV is way nicer to you than any of these. Than call half of these monopolies on the phone. I'd rather deal with the DMV than AT&T on the phone.
Yeah. Well, I got a good story for you, man. I flew back to Utah this weekend. I was able to find a nonstop flight from Charlotte to Salt Lake. It did not get canceled when I got to Dallas. I made it to Utah this time. We got to Utah 30 minutes early, and because the demolition on my condo went longer than we thought, I called Delta yesterday to see about paying extra to move my trip a day, so I get a bunch of work done today. And I told the guy that what we were doing, we're remodeling the condo, and it took a little more time than I thought, and we're getting about 2 hours of sleep, and both of us are sore. We've been working 24 hours a day, it seems like. And the guy gave me a free change in my ticket, and then he put me in the aisle in the extra leg row.
So, did you tell him you were a professor?
No, I didn't. If I would have told him that, he probably wouldn't have given me.
Did you tell him you're on stacks? Did you tell him you're on Stacks and Jacks?
I didn't tell him that, but I told him that we were remodeling, right?
Oh god.
So then he waived the $99 fee. And here's the kicker:
if he's ever done any remodeling, he knows just what you're talking about.
Yeah. When I purchased a ticket originally about 3 weeks ago, flying Saturday to any other day and flying back on Tuesday, Saturday and flying back on any other day but Tuesday was like $1,000. Saturday and then return on Tuesday ticket was $500.
Kevin said the show just stopped streaming.
Huh?
No, I'm saying we have a technical problem that Ricky's working
on. Oh, okay. All right. You don't hear through the mic. But yeah, so him changing it, not only did I not have to pay the $99 fee, I got to pay that lower ticket price from Saturday to Tuesday flights. It was great, man. The guy was awesome.
I think
the guy was just a nice guy.
I think with your issues with the airlines, you should get your own plane.
Well, it'd be great. I could put a blonde wig on it.
You could get the, get yourself an old DC-3 or something. You'll get there. You don't have to worry about it being pressurized or anything.
I still got four kids, so.
Well, the DC-3 holds 30 people. It was the original passenger.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm worried about. That'd be great to get people in and out, but you got to maintain the thing. You have to have a crew of
electricians. That's what you got people for.
Yeah, but I got to pay those salaries.
Well, you
got to pay the jet fuel.
Now, you can do like Warren Buffett. Instead of having his own personal jet, he bought a piece of what's the outfit that you go on whenever you need one? They got one for you.
Did he buy Wheels Up, that private airline?
It's not a private airline. It's a place that does the executive jets.
Oh,
I get asked for them all the time. How about joining our group? Because we. Because if you ever go out to Midway, there's always a jet waiting for you. So you don't have to wait. It doesn't have to be yours. You just say where you're going, how big a one you need, and off you go.
Yeah, it's like the future of automobiles, I think.
Well,
people are going to end up leasing them. They're going to be in a group where they can get a car pretty much anytime they want. They're going to be in a club. And that's the future of car ownership, I think. These cars are getting so expensive. And the maintenance is just getting to be unbelievably expensive.
Our man, evidently we stopped streaming, but we got to keep talking because it'll be on the
Yeah, tape. I can hear you again.
But you can hear me because I have when I yell at Ricky, I have a button and I can stop my microphone. It's called a short stop. If you go to coffee, hit the button,
Oh, so do you have a Yahoo running around doing something?
A Yahoo? I have a producer?
Somebody that's yelling or screaming or something?
No, Ricky, we're back. We're back.
Oh, okay.
We were out for 5 minutes. We were actually switching from one streaming service to another.
Oh, just now?
No. It's been a month long deal.
Oh,
it's because the new one's going to be better, and they can keep more shows on the disc and all that stuff. We've been with these guys for 15 years. All of a sudden, the price keeps going up, and then they go, by the way, your server, which is what I'm renting from them. Your server is becoming obsolete. You got to send us dough for a new server. And I go, wait a minute. That's what you idiots are providing. That's why I pay you. It's like you paying the rent. Who does this? Who the hell is telling me? Was it Carl? No. A lot of places in the really nice weather areas, like one of the guys who I was traded with in one of the firms we did some business with, I think he's got a place, not in Charlotte, but somewhere in Carolina. Whenever you want to go over and rent a boat, you just rent a boat. You're a member. It costs $500 a month to be a member of this club, and whenever you go over and rent a boat, it's whatever per hour. You don't have to worry about fixing your own boat or anything. You just go and hop into one, set what size you want, and off you go. Yeah.
Well, that's the future cars. That's the future car ownership, I think.
No, I want my own truck. I don't care if it's old. I want my own truck.
Yeah.
Just
Well, eventually that truck's not going to work. They're gonna obsolete the technology that keeps it running. I can guarantee they will.
They're going to try, but actually, there's a lot of YouTube things now about here's the truck you want to buy, something from like the 90s where the engine, they can't track you, they can't do anything.
My 68 Ford, 4x4, that thing weighed probably 7,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And every time I filled it up, I would check the timing while it was filling the tank. I would check the timing of it because it had that old point system. And it just starts slipping after a while. So I'd go out, pop my timing light right on the engine, and adjust the timing. And every couple months, I had to adjust the gap between the points.
Yeah.
Because if I did it, it would get 4 miles a gallon. And when I did that, it usually got about 8 to 9.
Yeah, it wasn't much, but Everything now is there's all
these... Hey, double the gas mileage is double the gas mileage. I don't care if it's four to eight.
That is the truth. I mean, this truck gets probably 15, 16, where the Suburban got like 11. Kind of feels like I'm driving for free.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot. I mean, this thing might actually get better than that. But hey, what? So
well,
what?
Those new vehicles, we rented a Buick SUV about a month ago, and that thing got 30 miles a gallon.
Yeah,
man.
They do pretty well. Well, they're real light. I mean, they're not. I mean,
yeah.
But they also.
But it did feel like we were doing 75, but I found myself doing 80 and 85. Fortunately, everybody in North Carolina drives 85 miles an hour on the interstate, so. But I found myself hitting 85 a couple times because it just did not feel like we were even going 60. It was amazing.
Well, we have this issue with the money coming in. We have the CPI tomorrow. What are you expecting? Yeah. How long can we fake these numbers? They're going to say, you know, that it's going to be way down, and the labor numbers last week. How is it? Al, you're an economics professor, and I've told this story a few times, but. My first class in economics, I walk into Notre Dame, I sit down, and the first thing the guy says out of his mouth was something about the unemployment rate came out yesterday, and basically what a horseshit measure this thing is, and it's the worst number, it's absolutely useless, you know.
Yeah.
Here I am, I don't want to say how many years later, and yesterday all these people were talking about was how the unemployment rate Friday was down.
Yeah.
And now I don't see how. I mean, you know, I'm sure if I walked up to some doctor, he'd think that I'm the dumbest man on earth talking about medical terms, which I wouldn't know. But these numbers we talk about in these labor numbers, I mean, when you dig into them as like Carl does, when you dig into them like Carl does, that's why people listen to the show, because he does a spectacular job and he goes to places where you and I aren't liable to do, right? But
yeah.
If you just look at the first. You know, the idiot page, the summary, the A1 page. I don't care who you are. This is really pretty simple, okay? There's a certain number of people that are over a certain age, by the way, aren't in jail or aren't in a mental institution. They're non-institutionalized people that are available for work, okay? This is not that hard of a definition, is it? I mean, for anybody? Yeah. Out of there, you have two groups of people. The first group is people that are working or are looking for work. And then the second group is, we don't know what they're doing. They could be going to school, they could be retired, they could be couch surfing, they could be God knows what. Well, the number in the middle, the key number, is the amount of people that aren't working but are looking for work. Okay. Most people might say the numbers really ought to be the people that are working and the people that aren't working. And how do we figure out whether somebody's actually looking for a job or not? And that's what this guy's point was. He goes, if there's no jobs available, nobody's going to be looking for a job, so the unemployment rate's going to be really low because there's no jobs out there. All of a sudden, if there's jobs out there, people start looking. If you actually counted the people that were looking, if you actually cared about doing that, your unemployment rate's going to go up, but things are actually better. He said, these numbers are horrendous. It's a horseshit count. So
yeah.
So all we did, all I heard on every radio, so the unemployment rate's down to 4.1%, how great that is. Actually, we have more people that aren't working than we ever have.
Well, so you look at the employment population ratio.
That's what I'm saying. It's down to...
It's horrible. It's heading down.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's down from 59.7
Well, the December. Employment population ratio heading down means either employment is falling or the labor force is rising. The labor force is rising and the employment... If labor force is rising and nothing's going on with employment, that means people are looking for work that can't find work.
Right. When people were allegedly healthy, when the economy was supposedly healthy, you know, back in like the late 90s and those kinds of things, the amount of people that actually worked, that were available to work, was 64.3, 63.9. That was your percentage. Okay. Now, to some extent, I mean, the people that retired probably got more than enough money. Hopefully they do, not all of them. You don't worry about them, but the idea is if you get down to where, say, 40% of the people are working, somehow or another, that 40% have to pay for the largesse of the other people, right? Not the people that are retired. I mean, you're not going to worry about if Elon Musk retires, you're not going to worry about paying for him. But by and large, you like to see that number up higher. And to go from 64 to under 59, that we're talking 5% of 165. It's like 8 or 9 million people.
Yeah,
now aren't contributing. They're on the other side.
If you look at the 1960s, the employment to population ratio was 55.3, and it went up to 65 right before the 2001 recession.
Okay, now in the 60s,
what was causing that? What was causing that? That was probably women entering the labor market.
But in those days, the guy used to make enough money where she didn't have to work, or she made enough money where he got it. Now, we got away with that. We said, okay, we're going to put women in them. But now that brings up another whole problem. How do you take care of the kids? What other things do you pick up? But the idea that you don't...
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. The employment population ratio... I had 2 hours sleep last night.
Okay.
The employment to population ratio, the divisor is the working age population.
Yeah.
So the working age population is very stable. So if it's falling, that means employment is declining.
Yeah.
That's the reason why,
Well, I mean, but you can't... You can't have three people, although I will say this. Nancy says that our mortgage, and whenever, you know, when you give mortgages to people, you know everything about them, right?
Yeah.
She goes, an awful lot of families, you went from one person working in the 60s, 70s, you know, maybe somebody worked part-time or something, but you went from one person to now two people working with all the ancillary costs of childcare and all that stuff. But now she goes, a lot of places, they're two and a half jobs.
Yeah.
Where if one of them is an accountant, they're doing taxes on weekends, you know.
Or January, if they're an accountant, they have their 40 hours in the office.
Yeah.
And they have their 40 hours above their garage doing under the table work.
Well, if you're doing people's, you know, taxes and you're getting paid, it's not under the table.
Well, I know, but you have your. That means that person is working two jobs.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah.
Or she called it a half job because you know if you're doing taxes, you're only doing it for one part of the year.
Yeah, exactly. So that'd be you know, one and a half jobs right there, right?
Or you know, somebody's helping out. Maybe you're selling real estate on the side. Or
and if you're living in New York, in Long Island, where your property taxes are $15,000 or $20,000 a year, right? Where you have to pay the state a mortgage for your property, and you got to pay your bank the mortgage for your property. You might be also doing a side hustle as an Uber driver or DoorDash as well, you know?
Yeah, or dog walker or something.
Or dog walker, yeah. So the decline in the employment population ratio, if the working age population is getting smaller as boomers retire, we have this working age population declining, that would actually cause the employment population ratio to rise. But it's on the decline, which means, I'm thinking what that means is, you saw the horrible male labor participation rate.
Yep.
I think what's happened is women are continuing to work in the private sector, but men are like just dropping out.
Well,
but, you know, I also read this other article where there are apparently, I think, 29 million solopreneurs. A solopreneur is a person who starts a business and they're their only employee. So that might be related to all this gig.
How many businesses can only have one employee? Even if you're cutting lawns, you have a guy helping you.
But a guy that buys 3-4 motorhomes and runs them out on outdoorsy.com, that guy is a solopreneur.
Right. There's not very many.
There's a lot of guys doing that.
Yeah. I don't know about...
There's 29 million people doing this, and maybe those...
I'd love to see those statistics and their definitions.
Yeah. Well, I tweeted it last Tuesday.
I guess if you sell something on eBay, you're a solopreneur, right?
Well, if you're doing what my mother-in-law's tenant's doing in Brooklyn, you walk into his studio apartment. He's got 4-foot by 8-foot shelving in his apartment, and he's got stacks and stacks of, you know, athletic shoes. And I think what he's doing is he's selling them on StockX. He buys them, he holds them, and sells them three months later.
That was the whole idea of eBay when it started out. Everybody's going to stop their job and just start selling crap on eBay. I mean,
I bet you run out of the crap that you need to sell.
Right. We're going to have a dash to break.
But you got to find a piece of toast that looks like Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, right? I suppose if you sell something on... You know, we were actually in the... when my niece was just out of college, right? a long time ago. We remember that thing on TV, Storage Wars?
Yeah, I liked hoarders better.
Wait, but that's what you did. People have people, you know, have these storage facilities.
Hoarders just pile up their basement.
No, but this was people get the storage facilities.
Storage Wars, they probably have it really nicely organized.
No, they don't.
They don't? Okay.
Okay, right. I know. There's always rules. Every place has an auction, right? There are rules.
It's the one where people have abandoned their stuff.
Well, they abandoned it. They probably croaked.
Yeah.
But whatever it is.
Maybe they got a new job.
Nobody cares. They just didn't pay, right? And if you don't pay you got to give them notice. I don't know how the hell they were doing that. Yeah. But basically, you go from place to place, and there'd be four, five, six of them in every place.
They run the auction, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, they run the auction. Yeah. So my nephew and niece and I went and bid on some of these things, thinking that the two of them, because they didn't have a summer job, might actually get in front of the TV and put the stuff on eBay. It was before Etsy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, do the job right. Well, of course, you know, that wasn't going on. I mean, the idea of all they did was get lunch out of me, for God's sake. But it was very, very interesting. The rules are, allegedly, the place is not supposed to take a look at what's inside. Allegedly.
Yeah.
There has to be this auction. So there's, you know.
Well, you gotta pretend that there's drama there when there's not, right?
You open the door, and somebody will immediately say, oh, I got a shit. You know, so it's sort of like, you know, in golf, somebody will say it's in the hole, and the guy, you know, swings on TV. So you look in, and all you.
Or Will Ferrell in that Netflix series. Called The Hawk. He plays a professional golfer. He's trying to make it back on the pro tour. He gets in a zone where he taps the putt and he walks away immediately and it's going in.
God. Well, the thing is, then you bid and you actually get a little better at it. But, you know, if a box is like bulging on the sides, then that means it's like towels and stuff. It's worth nothing.
Yeah.
So, but if you see a really good piece of furniture, then you make the assumption that whoever person this is, all the furniture is going to be halfway decent, but
yeah, I can imagine you getting really good to be able to spot that.
We only did it a little bit.
Hey, you get better the more you do something.
But it's amazing the timing. The thing is, you have to be big enough. You got to get the stuff out of there in 24 hours.
Yeah,
which means you have to have a place. First of all, you need a vehicle to get it out of there, especially if there's like a refrigerator or something in there. You got to get it off the grounds, and. You know, so you need a place to dump the stuff you don't want. So you got to have some place to do that, and not in somebody else's backyard. And oh, by the way, you probably need a place with a studio with the lighting and all that stuff if you're going to sell it. And it's amazing how the prices come down to be somewhat okay. Because at the time, one of the storage lockers had probably 600-700 albums in there.
Oh,
you know, and so you look at it, and it went for, you know, $500 or something. And you'd say, well, wait a minute, those things are worth, you know, in China at the time, they were buying, you know, albums, if the cover and everything was right, was, you know, 60, 70, 75 hours. Yeah. Okay, but now think for a second. Somebody has, if you're going to be a decent site on eBay or someplace, you have to have somebody clean the thing up, you got to listen to it, because if there's scratches in it, you got to let them know. So the album's going to be 40, 45 minutes to listen to, right? You've got to put the thing together, take the pictures, make it look good. It's going to be about an hour per album for you to get it on eBay, if you want to do it right.
Yeah.
So if the person, if you're going to pay the person, first you buy the damn things, then you move them. You better pay somebody $20 or $25 an hour to do it right, and you're going to get $55, $60 for the album. It's a profit center. You can make money doing it, and obviously have a couple people make money too, but it's not, you can't just pick them up, you know, for a dollar a piece and drop them into a record store and have the guy say, I'll give you 50 a piece. It ain't happening. It's amazing how economics actually works. It's amazing how economics works.
Yeah.
And if you say there's one scratch, it's okay, but you better say so.
Yeah.
Or else your whole store. Well,
people don't want to be lied to.
Right, but I'm saying it's not as easy. One of the guys, we bought this one, and it was a whole, the guy had all his baby clothes in there. It was all brand new. Well, my helpers, I could have made money on that. Instead, I bought it all to Goodwill. because they were dying to get it. But you would have had to take every piece of clothing with a tag still on. You would have to take a picture of it, make it look good. But that's all time. You could have made, but if you set yourself out to make, I want to make $35 an hour, you can do that. But you're going to work for it. It's not a freebie. Nothing's a freebie.
No such thing as free.
S&P futures up 11, NASDAQ futures up 9. It's a quick break, and we'll come back and let's talk more about this money and just how far we can go with this, because I think they're kind of, I'm not, you know, you never know the day, but I think we're getting close here a little bit. Hal, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and Overpay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamar, Ricky on the board. Ricky, you managed to get everything fixed real quick. Good for you. The S&P futures up 11, NASDAQ futures up 96. We have individual stocks, and Boeing up 285, and Caterpillar up 440. But Caterpillar has really made a move since they got into this AI a little bit. But boy, it's driving that stock way up more than you would think a bulldozer company would do, but it certainly is. We have the Dow's up 19, not much going on in the Dow. Like I said, NVIDIA's up 342, that's in the Dow. And Caterpillar was up 440, but you got Google down 97 cents. You got Amgen down 70. Some stuff's down. Honeywell's down $1.70. So kind of slow morning so far. Renasia, we've got the computer's a little slow here. Nikkei up 1300. That's 2%. Wait a minute. No, they're not trading today. For some reason, they're not trading today. The other guys are. The Hang Seng up 24, down to 284. That's 1.1%. Shanghai down 32.8. So I don't know why Nikkei is closed, but the Hang Seng and China are both down. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 74.3%. FTSE up 11.1%. CAC around up 1. Call that flat. So slightly bullish in Europe, slightly. Bonds, the interest rates would start marching right back up. Actually unchanged today, but we're right at this 4.7 in the 10-year. Which is not good, and we're 5.25 on the 30-year. Those were danger numbers a while ago, and now everybody seems to think it's okay. Oil, Brent, or West Texas is up 51 cents, 82.64, a long way from the $67 of a couple of weeks ago. So evidently, the strait's not opening anytime soon if you look at the oil market. RBOB is 314, so again, you got to add whatever your taxes are to that, so you're probably paying 380, 390, 4, 410, depending on your taxes. Gold, up $29, $44.48. This is up from 4,000 in the last week or so. It's a huge rally. Silver down 13 cents, 65.14. Foreign exchange here, the one we're looking at, is the Japanese yen is back up to 159.27. The intervention had it down to 150, up to 157. When I say up, when it's down, it means this is yen per dollar. Okay, so you got to look at it that way. Crypto, Bitcoin up 366, 64.302, but remarkably steady around the 64,000 number for a while. Ricky, too much stuff. Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 75 degrees right now with a high of 78. Humid with showers and a heavier thunderstorm later today. Tonight will be partly cloudy and humid with a low of 71 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 106. Partly sunny and very warm. Thunderstorm in the area late this afternoon. Tonight, the possibility of another thunderstorm. Otherwise, mostly cloudy with a low of 81 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, 22 minutes. Iman Kennedy from Montrose. We're looking at 35 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf is 29 minutes. We're looking at 16 minutes. Then Ryan from 95th. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 is 24 minutes. For sports, yesterday the Diamondbacks destroyed the Rockies 9-0. Today we got Cubs at Nationals 5:45 p.m. and Reds at White Sox 6:40 p.m. Finally, Rockies at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. Now for the NFL. NFL preseason starts this Thursday, August 13th. First games will be Lions at Bengals and Packers at Steelers at 6 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back to you.
You all fired up for the exhibition season?
Yes.
Me?
Yeah. Oh. Any of you guys. But the tickets are full price.
It's not my jam.
No. Just remember, there used to be six of those games.
Yeah.
That's when guys had another job in the in the off season, and they had to
actually... Well, now, I don't think the Stars... If the Stars play at all during those games, it might be like one drive of the first quarter.
They play usually the first half of the third game.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
I just stopped watching it.
Well, the first game...
I can't watch it.
Yeah, you can't. It's, you know, I suppose if you... You know, you're looking for to see the guys who are trying to make the team and that kind of thing. If you're
the only way I'd watch it is if I had my son or my one of my brother's kids trying to make an NFL football team. That's the only way I'd watch.
You'd watch it if Kyle brought the beer.
Yeah, I guess we would.
Could you guys be talking economics and drinking beers, pretending you're watching a game? Which would be all right. I mean, how many times do people watch a crummy game and it's really the socialization is why they're there?
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, I can see that. I'd rather just watch a game on my home TV. The experience with my home TV, I got this like 7 foot wide TV above our fireplace, and I'd rather watch a movie there. I sound like my stepfather.
7 foot wide. Why don't you put it in the garage and go sit in the car and watch it like you're at a drive-in?
Hey, the drive-in still goes on in Utah.
They got one in Indiana too.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. When we first started going to the drive-in here in Utah, when the kids were triplets, they'd have like a cartoon for the adult or the kids, the first feature, and they'd have like a premium movie on the second feature, and they were asleep by the time that second movie started. That was awesome. But then they stopped doing that, and that's the only reason why I wanted to go.
Well, they used to do the cartoons first for the kids and the shorts, and then they did the movie too. You know, I'm going to ask Ricky, what's, if I can remember the term, it'd be an easier question. You know where they were really big at the drive-ins? They were big in that, what's the term, sublimation? Ricky probably knows, but when you see a movie, Ricky, it's actually, they don't do it this way anymore, but it actually is 24 still pictures a second, right, Al?
Yeah.
And, you know, so like your first cartoons, actually people drew out all the different cartoons and then they ran them fast. But what you wanted to do if you were sneaky, which I think is now illegal, but who the hell knows if people do it or not, it used to be where you'd sit there at the drive-in and you go, man, I feel like a hot dog. What they would do is out of the 24, they'd put like an extra one or two that was a picture of a hot dog.
Yeah.
Or a Pepsi.
Yeah.
And even though you don't see it, your mind picks it up.
Yeah.
And it makes you hungry. They used to do that on regular TV.
Fight Club.
What's the name of that?
I don't know if you knew that, but Fight Club did that with a couple scenes.
Yeah, but yeah. You'd sit there.
It wasn't Coca Cola.
So when they'd go to break and they'd have the dancing hot dogs, everybody going to the stand, everybody piles out of their cars and heads because they've been watching the hot dog for the last 2 hours,
yeah.
even though you didn't see it. Yeah. And then somewhere along the line in the 60s, they banned that from TV.
What would the movie theater? Slide it in there. The local owner of the movie theater.
Somehow they did. I know the drive-ins were big on it. I don't know if the movie theaters.
Well,
did
now they just instead of doing that, now they just have Pepsi. Yeah, the guy's drinking a Pepsi on camera.
Yeah,
so that's what they
yeah.
do now.
It's a, but well,
they
back
just do placements.
But
now,
this is a whole different. This is a whole different world. If my grandfather never went to the movie, but if my grandmother would have gone to the movie and they had a commercial, you know, this is after TV. They had a commercial. They'd like, I just paid money here. I paid to not have a commercial.
Yeah.
And now, of course, it's like cable TV. You're supposed to pay for it because there weren't going to be any commercials. Well, there's as many commercials on cable as on regular TV, right?
Yeah. Well, that just shows you how probably tight the margins are for them to squeeze in some commercials.
No, it's how much money they want to make.
I know, but yeah. I think the margins are really tight.
Well,
right.
That's what they would say.
Three different ways for the same product or service, the margins are tight.
Well, that's what they would say.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but I don't necessarily think a starting tackle needs to make $80 million a year. Okay, right? I mean,
well, if he's a 6'8" guy with a 7-foot wingspan,
I'm just saying the money
on the left side.
The money filters down. If he's making that, what do you think the owners are making?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So hey, okay.
Well, the owners are making out like bandits because they engage in perfect price discrimination.
Yeah.
Via the draft.
Well, the draft and by the way, you know. You can't start up another football team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. So what? Where is this? You know, we talk about these valuations, and we never. you know, I'm real happy with this rally because, you know, we've got a couple of them chasing calls in, but by and large, you know, our guys are doing pretty good at this stuff. I mean, we suggested not put people in. I mean, who the hell knows? We suggested just because it was down so damn low, we didn't know there was going to be a war. You know, we suggested, I'll get the 1 year here. Just because it was low, not because we're geniuses. We suggested last year people did real well on the GDX and a couple other things. My brother says, you know, every time oil gets down to $57, for whatever reason, it goes back up. There's always a reason. It was always going to zero, and it never does. And when it gets to 100, it's always going to 150, and it never does. Never is a long time. But we suggested maybe the XLE. It got so beat up on at the end of last year. It was like trading 42. We had no idea that there was going to be a war. I mean, now all of a sudden, yeah, it's 60. So, and we haven't had any calls in there, so pretty much
everything's got... Yeah, Trump did promise no new wars.
Yeah, well, I got this thing, not that we're beating up on the orange man here, but when he ran for office,
yeah, he said no new wars.
He was all over Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
He was all over, what's the Trump currency? Well, Bitcoin's down 40%. The Trump coin's down 97%, and gold's up 22%.
Yeah.
You know, the dumb people now that are around, they're not, you know, they haven't been around as long as I have, but they're difference makers. I'm not, I know that, but this whole idea of we're going to keep pouring money in whenever there's a problem, and we're going to hope people don't notice the inflation or don't notice that they're not getting a raise and they notice their life's getting worse. We hope that they don't do anything about that, okay? Like, you know, like demonstrate or write letters or worse. And yet they're continuing to do it. I don't see any possible way here, Hal, that somebody, that there's a person sitting in this White House or the last where somebody's, oh, man, the market's way down.
Or future.
You know, I mean, at some point they might be sort of forced to, because they were... In the Carter era, when I say the Carter era, he's the one who hired
Volcker.
And everybody thinks Reagan did. No, he didn't. Carter did. But, you know, Carter...
Volcker, I don't think, was a big fan of Reagan either. So.
No. Well, I mean, I don't know who Volcker was a big fan, but he was a banker guy. But
yeah.
The point being is, we're pouring money in the system.
The least bad Fed chairman, in my opinion.
Yeah. They're not independent. If they were independent...
Oh, they're not. No.
I mean, in terms of execution, the job is very difficult.
Yeah.
Okay, but in terms of policy, it's not very difficult. It's not very difficult at all. I mean, if you wanted to fight inflation today, and, you know, you'll probably try and disagree with me. I don't think you will on this one. If you were... we would, because we have this massive bubble that we've put in ever since COVID, and I don't know that you want to start... you know, pulling money out of the system, but the absolute you have to do right now is stop putting money into the system.
Yeah.
I would say you have to stop doing that. I would put a 10%, which is light, reserve requirement back in the banks, and I would raise the initial margin. You know, this is my industry. I'd raise the initial margin to 55 or 60% instead of 50. The idea that there's $200 billion in the last 3 months in borrowing for stocks, that is an absolute recipe for disaster.
It is, yeah.
So,
well, it goes back to the article I wrote back in December about the rule changes that were done in March of 2020, the banking rule changes. They create these really perverse, disgusting incentives where only the wealthiest people are getting... They're getting the lion's share of loans, and they're using these loans to buy financial assets, which is...
You're
stock markets to rise.
I'm going to push back on one part of it. You know, all you have to do is you know, you have to say you got something, you got a job or whatever. But if you want to buy IBM today at PTI or any other place, it's trading 236. You want to buy 1,000 shares. You got to send me. You don't have to send me 236,000. You got to send me 118. Yeah. You don't have to be rich to get that loan.
No, what I'm saying is the big banks, the big American banks, there's what, six of them now?
Four
of them now, yeah. So they went from seven to four because of the financial crisis, right?
No, because they were allowed to combine.
Yeah.
They went from how many to seven?
They're making the loans. I think they're making the loans to the non-financial, non-depository financial institutions. And that's where that so from the banks, from the Fed, it goes for these four massive American banks. And then from that point, that money that has been created through this lending then gets even multiplied more when it's lent out eventually to the people who are buying these loans on credit. So the key there is that these big, huge American banks, the four of them, they have these financial incentives to maybe only lend to those kind of institutions. Just where the bank.
Okay, but they're going to lend to anybody who wants to buy a stock. And
yeah, but the banks aren't making those loans.
Sure they are. Yeah, they are.
They're making the loans to the people who are making the margin loans.
No, they're yeah, okay, they're so IB.
There's an intermediary.
Yeah, right. IB is going to go. IB is going to get the loan from Chase or somebody.
Yeah.
What's the name of the number? Hypothecate the stock. So the stock is the collateral. But the loan's going to come out of a bank. But here's how our...
Yeah, it's going to originate in the bank. Well, it's going to originate in the Fed.
No.
Then it goes through
the bank,
which is basically doing an arbitrage.
The bank is going to lend you the money.
Yeah.
Okay, so... But here's what happens in terms of money supply. And, you know, I don't want to go into this because it's kind of complicated, but I think listeners can pick up on it. If you got $1 million account here or any place, and it's all paid for, now you can't do this in an IRA, okay, blah, blah, blah. Because you can't borrow against... Well, actually, you can borrow against an IRA, but that's another whole story. Most firms will not let you borrow against an IRA. Do you know the actual rule there, Hal?
I don't know the actual rule on an IRA.
Well, an IRA is...
The rules change.
No, it's been solid. Every brokerage firm will tell you you can't borrow money in an IRA. Okay, well, that's actually false. No firm will let you borrow money in an IRA, right? That part's true.
But they can do it, but they won't do it.
Well, say we were the only firm around, and you got $5 million account, it's an IRA, and you wanted to borrow $1 million for something, to go buy, you know, houses or something, or whatever it is. You can borrow that money, and you can pay interest. Okay, but any money you make on that money that's above and beyond, that becomes taxable.
Yeah.
So, and nobody wants any part of that accounting, right? Including us. So the simple word is you can't do it. But the fact is you can't. Okay, but like nobody will let you do it. Okay, yeah. So if you call up PTI and you say, I want to take out $1 million loan, margin loan, okay, you know, Dan calls up RBC or IB or whoever and. Bingo, you can give a wire to you or it's in the check. Well, now, okay, you now are going to take that money and put it in a checking account. You have just raised the money supply in the country by $1 million. Because now, how much money is around? Well,
and then the bank, they can pyramid off that.
So when you say the Fed, you know, how can they possibly let the balance sheet run down while they're maintaining... down or up while they're maintaining some, because if the money supply is growing fast, people are borrowing, the Fed has to actually retard that just to keep it where they are, where they want to be, correct?
Yeah.
So it's not an easy job for them to do that. So it's like I say, the execution is very, very difficult. But you don't grow your money supply at 8% and walk out on national TV and say how hard you're fighting inflation unless you're either lying to people or you're a moron. And I don't think these people are morons. I think they're lying to people.
Well, I think one of the problems with the Fed is the what I called normal mode, the regime, the Federal Reserve monetary policy tools prior to 2008, when you did a purchase of stocks, you pushed the federal funds rate down. When the Fed sold them, it pushed the federal funds rate up. Now...
Right, so when they,
post 2008, it's been decoupled.
Right,
been decoupled.
When they sold them, it means, if they buy them, they're putting money in the system.
Yeah, when they're purchasing.
Yeah, and when they sell them, they're pulling
they
money
bring
out
down
the
federal
system.
Funds rate. When they sell them, it pushes up the federal funds rate. That's how it was prior to 2008. But since 2008, they can buy and sell within a range, a pretty substantial range, and they're not going to affect changes to the federal funds rate because there are so many excess reserves in there. So if Bessent, not, yeah, if a Warsh wants, sorry, if Warsh doesn't take the proceeds from the treasuries it owns, from the treasury when they mature, if he just kind of puts that money back in the ground, so to speak, and he keeps doing that, eventually they're going to run out of these excess reserves, and he'll recouple an open market purchase, pushing the federal funds rate down.
Right, but
he'll recouple that mechanism.
But he'll get on there and bleat like a friggin' goat about how he is, you know, inflation and full employment. The man, in my opinion,
no, I think the only difference between him and the previous guy,
there's no difference.
Is now this guy's just not talking as much.
There's no way his job, with the guy he's got as his boss or thinks he's his boss.
Well, he's no longer his boss.
Well, okay, he thinks he is. He thinks he's everybody's boss, but that's another story.
Yeah. But now the guy's got his term. He can't fire him.
His only job, without getting abused daily like the last guy was, is to not let the market go down between now and November.
Well, the thing about that, Tom, though, is if Trump starts abusing Warsh, that's Warsh will be supported by everybody that can't stand Trump in the media, so he'll be like their hero. So that's the issue.
Okay,
right,
but
here.
What I'm
Trump
saying
has no power over Warsh.
What I'm saying is right now, in one man's opinion, and I've been watching this for a long time, the concern of the Federal Reserve is no longer you and I having a 3% inflation rate versus 2. They'd rather it be 2, but if it's 3, so
yeah,
what?
They're okay with that.
The concern is this bubble, this asset bubble, where all the people that have assets being houses and stock, which, by the way, are my clients and me, so it's not like I get this, is to not let the bubble burst. Yeah. We have to maintain the bubble. And they're going to do that until they take everybody else down. Yeah. And
Warsh has to do it.
Well, okay, I'm saying, but Powell did the same thing.
I know, yeah.
You know, the last guy who kind of went against the grain a little bit was Greenspan when Bush won, was running and lost, and Bush was pissed off at him because he didn't he didn't open up the floodgates when he was running against Clinton. So it's always the Fed's fault, but now it's got to the point where it's more money.
Well, Bush had another thing that Bush had going on. He had that.
I'm talking about first Bush
victory against Saddam.
Okay, but that lasted 3 months.
Yeah, but he had like 80% approvals.
Yeah, and he blew it.
It creates a moral hazard, I think, of some sort, politically.
Well,
and I think he sat on his laurels too long. He was going to ride that 80% approval from that war. He was going to ride that to re-election, and
well,
you know,
whatever,
we went into recession.
Whatever he been, you know, it changed the history.
Him doing that in that year, that re-election effort, was like Hillary not going to Michigan when she was running against Trump, in my opinion.
Well, I mean,
they had this hubris.
It changed history.
Yeah,
in the sense that when none of the big time Democrats, I can't remember who the hell they were, wanted to run against him. They thought he was a total shoo-in.
Yeah.
And Clinton was young and, you know, good talker and everything else. He goes, I'll run.
Oh, he was the premier politician until this guy shows up.
Okay, what I'm saying, well, this
and
guy...
that is not a compliment.
There's a whole different...
Calls me a beautiful politician is not...
One guy tries to find the hate in people and pushes it there. Clinton never did that. But my point being is Clinton essentially ran for office thinking he would be pretty close, he'd do a good job, people would, in the campaign, people would like him, and he'd be a shoo-in 4 years later.
Yeah, I think that was the goal.
That was the whole thing. And all of a sudden, then he wins, which means if he'd have been 4 years older, I think he'd have been a way better president. We wouldn't have had Bush 2, probably. I don't know who he'd have had. But I think the history would have been a lot different if Bush would have been another 4 years. It would have set... I don't think Clinton would have had all the foibles with the women if he was 4 years older. He might have, you know, who knows? But
well, I think those kinds of foibles are a result of. I say this a lot because they're everywhere. Moral hazards when you don't have to bear the full cost of the decisions you make, it makes you a worse and worse decision maker over time. Well,
but if you're, I mean, you know, I'm older, no, but I'm not dead. But aren't many 65-year-old guys I know working three women at the same time?
Yeah, but you know, politicians, you know, guy with charisma.
Okay, but I'm not saying they don't have the urge to it. Just
there are a lot of billionaires who look like my grandpa, who for some reason have a pretty hot 25-year-old girlfriend.
Okay,
Coach Belichick. I mean, he's not.
They don't have. My point is, they don't have three of them.
Yeah, they don't have three of them.
I mean,
they have two of them, Tom.
But the guy who's the Secret Service book said the one day that Monica was down at the gate and they wouldn't let her in.
I wouldn't have dated Monica in the 90s. That was my jam.
I'm just saying, if the story was, remember,
I lost respect for Bill when I, you know, like that. That's who he jeopardized his presidency over. I was like, dude, come on, man.
He was allegedly doing something with Eleanor Mondale, who did everybody, by the way.
Eleanor Mondale?
Eleanor Mondale. She was married to, she was a disc jockey here in Chicago. And the guy who was a tackle for the Bears, Keith Van Horn, a real nice guy, he worked at the same station. So they end up...
Wasn't that a good offensive line?
Oh God, yeah. They had him. They had Jimbo Covert. They had Tom Thayer. Yeah. I mean, God bless. They had a terrific line. But he meets her. They get married, and she alleged that she had sex with somebody other than him on their wedding day or something. She was a player. Anyway, so Bill is taking care of her in one of the pool tables in the White House, and I'm sitting there. God, if I ever get invited and they bring me to the pool room, I'm gonna wonder which table. But
well, you know, my wife doesn't have anything to worry about because Snars. In my family tree, the Crofts and the Snars. The Crofts, if you go back three or four generations, they will have four or five wives in that Mormon culture. But the Snars, we were always monogamous. And
I thought you were going to say she didn't have to worry about you because you don't have a pool table.
Snars, I think Snars in general, one of our lasting legacies is that we are clueless about women. We are the most clueless group of men.
What do you mean? You got a nice wife, you got a nice family. You're not too clueless.
I know, but it took me forever to find her.
Anyway, he had Eleanor in the pool room. What's her name? Was at the gate, and Hillary was looking for him. All going on at the same time. And this is in the middle of the afternoon.
Wow.
I think when you get a little older, you don't be doing that stuff. I mean,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, maybe not. I mean, but you got these guys in their 60s.
Yeah.
You know, these actors.
Oh yeah, well, those guys, their whole job is, it's all they do is take care of themselves. Anyway, yeah. Are we going to make it to the election, or is this going to fall apart? I mean, if we have to keep investing in the yen, I think if this war keeps going and some of these countries are having trouble, I don't know that we can keep going on this till November.
Well, I think the countries that are in trouble, like Japan, are probably inflating more than the Federal Reserve. But, I mean, as long as we inflate at a slower pace than the euros and the yens, then we'll be fine. I think.
This whole concept of relative.
For the immediate run.
But the issue is those guys, we're counting on them to show up to buy our debt.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Well, we have new friends in the Middle East. The Abraham Accord nations, I think, are. I think Trump's administration, their true allies are these Abraham Accord nations. Well, I think, you know, Europe seems to be kind of, in general, generally hostile.
Well,
we got to
be careful with that because we owe those guys like a couple of trillion dollars in Europe.
Yeah.
Anyway, take care of yourself. What do you got going? Anything crazy for a week?
Well, today I'm gonna build the transom window that allow more easily for people to move in and out of the condo.
Right.
It's a transom window that's gonna go up to the ceiling. And on the lower part of the frame is going to be the door jam, the top of the door jam.
You'll be there next week. You'll be calling the Delta guy every day.
Oh, no. I'm going to get a lot of work done today.
Well, good luck with that, buddy.
I'll be flying home tomorrow.
Thanks for piling on. Fly safe. SP Futures up 12. NASDAQ Futures up 111. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.